You're listening to the ISACA podcast. I'm your host, Abby Norton, and today I'm speaking with ISACA security experts, Dustin Brewer and Frank Downs. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about APTs, or Advanced Persistent Threats. So to get us started, can you tell me why we're talking about APTs today?
So Dustin and I were talking the other day. We happened to read the news from time to time. And one of the things that jumped out yesterday, I think it was yesterday, was the FireEye hack. And what was interesting, what we liked about it, well, no one likes being hacked, but the thing we thought was an interesting element of it was that it was, they're attributing it to an APT, to an advanced persistent threat. And we were talking about how, you know, you don't really hear too much about those types of hacks in the news anymore by those types of actors. You hear a lot about ransomware, right? And, oh, we don't know who it was, and somebody did ransomware and this and that. But like the fact that they're calling out specifically in this instance an advanced persistent threat is unique to this type of to this attack, because advanced persistent threats in and of themselves are very unique. And we were like, hey, well, not everyone really understands what an APT is, right? And just because of our backgrounds where we were forced to know what APTs are, right?
I think where we worked, we just called them threats. They weren't
necessarily. Yeah, we
necessarily.
Just called them threats. Yeah. When we worked for DOD, we just kind of called them threats. They're just like, the bad guys. Ah, look out. Right? But, you know, as cybersecurity has grown as a field writ large, right, these are terms that have kind of become part of the, I'd say, vernacular of cybersecurity. And so it's something we wanted to discuss because not everyone knows them. Not everyone knows like what they are, or why they're special and all that. So we wanted to, you know, just kind of discuss that for a little bit. I guess I'll kick it off. So if you go to a lot of people have a lot of different ways of saying what APTs are and so forth. But we were like, well, this is ISACA. Let's start with the official ISACA definition. And the official definition is.
Yeah. Do you want me to read this?
Thank you, futurist Dustin Brewer. You go ahead and do it.
An adversary that possesses sophisticated levels of expertise and significant resources, which allows it to create opportunities to achieve its objectives using multiple attack vectors. Now, it should also be noted that this is from the NIST SP-861 document. Also, we have these scope notes here that on what an APT is, and I will pass this back over to Frank.
The scope notes here specifically state that, one, the APT pursues its objectives repeatedly over an extended period of time. Two, adapts to defenders' efforts to resist it. And three, is determined to maintain the level of interaction needed to execute its objectives. So those are kind of highfalutin ways to say certain things. And so I'll give you the Frank translation, and then Dustin can give you the Dustin translation. And hopefully in there you have the unofficial ISACA translation that no one will approve. So when we're talking about pursues its objectives repeatedly over an extended period of time, that's kind of where the persistence comes from. And that's indicative of a lot of things, right? That statement is actually pretty impactful because it means that it has the funds to keep trying when they fail, right? It has the funds, support, and manpower to keep throwing effort at the target they've selected. And for those of you out there who have any experience with this or have, you know, even managed a team, it costs a lot of money to launch attacks persistently. Like you have to pay for the people, you have to pay for the tool sets, you have, or you can steal them like they just did, waka waka, right? you have to pay for the systems, you have to pay for the infrastructure, right? To be a persistent actor is difficult in this line of work. So that's, you know, kind of an extrapolation of that statement. For the second one, adapts to defenders' efforts to resist it. Now, that's interesting because it means they're doing a holistic kind of experience here. They're not just attacking, trying to do smash and grab, run in their persistence of both effort. And by the way, I want to talk about that one more time. Once they gain access, they want to stay there. So they're a persistent presence as well, right? So they need to be able to adapt to anything that might change that persistence level. And we can talk a little bit about the different layers and levels of persistence later on. And three, is determined to maintain the level of interaction needed to execute its objectives, right? It's going to keep up its level of effort. It's going to continue to fund the effort. It's going to continue to evolve dynamically based upon what's being done by the target that it's attacking. And it's going to just keep going. So when we talk about persistence, you can think of it as a synonym for a lot of different definitions for persistence, or rather not synonym, the definition in the dictionary. It's like persistence in effort, persistence in access, right? Persistence in its continual observations of the actual target. I mean, what do you think there, Dustin? Now, here's Dustin with the Dustin half.
Yeah, and you know, to me, an APT isn't necessary. And I know that sophistication is kind of implied somewhere in here. But I think we've all kind of noticed that the most successful cyber attacks aren't necessarily that sophisticated. Sometimes it's a link that you click. The thing about an APT, though, I think for me is the persistent part. So where a group of hackers might try one avenue to get into a system, an APT is going to not only try multiple avenues, but try them for a very, very, very long time until they crack that nut. And that's what's so scary about that, because we can sit here and I I've seen a couple of comments on FireEye and like, ouch, that must hurt. You know, this is a cybersecurity firm that got hacked and,
right. You
know, they must feel really bad. And it's like, not really. If it truly was an APT, and if it truly was a well-funded group of people, and we've said this on this podcast before, if somebody wants to get your information, guess what? They're going to get it if they have that level of persistence. And of course, the funding doesn't hurt either, right? That means you can pay for great talent and also great tools and 0 days and all kinds of other scary things that are out there, right? So again, for me, that's the biggest part of this, is that these might not be the most sophisticated, although we have seen some sophisticated APT things in the past. They don't necessarily need to be. When it comes to the Sony hack, it was a lazy CEO. We had somebody who made their password exactly. Password or something along those lines, right? So, and that was at least an APT did take credit for it. So, but that was how they cracked it. That was how they got into the network. And then from there, they were able to wreak havoc. So for me, it's not necessarily about sophistication is a funny word, right? It's really objective. I think that a well-crafted phishing email can be incredibly sophisticated looking, right? It's got the logo on it. The domain looks right. You know, all the things that we're told to look out for, if all of them are well spoofed, there's not much anybody can do about it. Frank and I have both accidentally clicked on links that we weren't supposed to click.
No, I've never done it. Not once in my life.
Frank has never done it.
Shut up, Dustin.
But Dustin Brewer has done it before.
I have too. I'm not fooling anyone.
And that's the tricky part, right? And this is where, of course, we always get into the talking about changing of human behavior, right, at that point, and actually just keeping cognizant and making sure we're not getting too compliant with things.
And what's interesting also about it, too, is I like that you brought up, Dustin, that some of these attacks aren't very sophisticated. The actual process here, the repeatable process for all their different exploitations and attacks are actually that's the same thing everyone else does,
right.
Especially like with red teams. OK, so when you look at all what was it? I think it was Mandiant. They put out the method that one of the APTs was using. And it's very similar to what you see in like kill chain cycles and so forth and other things. Other exploitation life cycles, where the first thing is they scanned externally and found an initial compromise, right, which was either through social engineering or spear tacking, and they then established a foothold. After that, they then escalated privileges, did additional internal reconnaissance so they could do those lateral hops. Then they found places where they could just incorporate themselves, and they made sure that they covered their tracks. What we're talking about here is like basic red teaming process that you learn at Hacker 101 school and stuff like that. Or, you know, I'll do a little pitch here in the CSX penetration testing overview course that you can get from isocka.org. This is the basic process that you have. So that's something that's unique, but at the same time, not unique. That's why, like, you know, it's a lot of these things. That's where the persistence becomes really important, because it comes also down to the funding and the effort. And that's also why, you know, when you look at these threats and so forth, the majority of them are believed to be state funded. To leverage this kind of personnel, to leverage this type of effort, it needs like state level funding. But at the end of the day, it's just, I'm not going to say just, it's just a lot of money thrown at the same process and stuff like that. But you could, if you wanted to try and simplify it, say like, look, it really is a similar process, the same thing everyone else is doing. It's just the level of persistence and effort and access to resources.
And they can be sophisticated, right? Like, we don't know whether Stuxnet was a APT or not. It has been suggested that it was, because of the level of sophistication that went into that particular virus, right? So it can be. But again, for me, that's not a defining factor of it. It could be something very simple too, which again can be sophisticated depending on how you look at it. It's such a subjective term, but if you have your average end user reading something about a cybersecurity firm getting hacked, then you probably have questions like, wait, why did they get hacked? How did they get hacked? You know, why? And what would be the point? Is it just to hack them to have bragging rights, or are they going for something else? And that's a really good question, which we, of course, don't know the answers to yet. I'm sure there are investigations going on over at FireEye, and I'm sure that the governments are involved with helping figure out what's going on and what kind of information they got. And, you know, the cybersecurity community has tried to do a really good job of branding, if you will, cyber events. So we had Spectre and Meltdown, and we had Heartbleed, and we have all these cool names for everything. And maybe there will be a cool name for whatever happened at FireEye. We don't know yet, you know, that we don't know what was used. But with something like this, it's one of those things that's on such a high level that when it happens, either you don't hear about it because it's happened between governments, right? So it's going to be classified or something like that. Or, you know, the investigation is still ongoing, and so they just haven't told you the information yet. So it's a very rare occurrence to have such public exposure to something.
That was weird. I was actually really, I was like, wow, if I were FireEye, I wouldn't want to have to tell. This would not be something I'd be doing like some breaking news about. And it's especially considering what they took. They're like, yes. One of the things that were stolen was definitely our exploitation tools. It's like, oh, no.
Right.
Oh, no. Especially if you're FireEye, because I guarantee you there are several tools they had that nobody else probably had. You don't become a firm like FireEye with the capabilities that they have and, you know, the customers that they have without having at least a few special tricks up your sleeve. And now all of a sudden, we don't know how special they're going to be anymore, because whoever took them, if they wanted to at any point, could just, I mean, if they really wanted to damage FireEye, they could then just say, look, everybody, here are all the exploits that they used. Here are all the tools that they use, and basically put FireEye again at square one for that kind of effort. Or they could keep them. And now they've just increased their arsenal of capabilities. Who knows? Maybe several fold.
Right. Again, it's in the public eye. It's very rare to see this. Although, you know, we have seen leaks like that before. So with the Eternal Blue and other hacking utilities that were reportedly used and leaked by the NSA, I think, is what the reports have said. Although I don't think anything's ever been confirmed.
I mean, allegedly.
Yeah, it's all allegedly, right? But these different utilities that are used within the community, either as zero days or as pen testing tools or whatever, leaking and getting out into the wild, it's rare, but it does happen. And again, if somebody has the money and the time and the resources, anybody can get hacked. And, you know, I think we've said that before on this podcast, too. It's not, you know, these are the same themes that we kind of see that are recurring, where it's like, OK, you know, now it's an APT, you know, before it was. Oh, gosh, what else have we talked about on this podcast? Everything, right? From phishing to behavioral sciences of human beings, right? Of clicking on things they're not supposed to click on, or sharing information they're not supposed to share. So it's all over the place. It's all over the place. But it's the same recurring themes that we keep seeing. And actually, I recently wrote a piece in the ISOCA Journal that was all about how I went back and I read a paper from the United States Air Force back in the 1970s. And it was kind of like the first introduction of information security on a computer, and like how, you know, what could happen, what could possibly, the risks, what could possibly go wrong. And they talked about things, they didn't have a name for it at the time, but they talked about buffer overflow attacks, and they talked about access, the incorrect configurations, and things that, this was in the 70s, things that today are still an issue. And it's not fixed. And this is something that we've been talking about since the 70s. And it's amazing. It's amazing that it's almost the definition of insanity, right? Where we keep trying to do the same thing over and over again while expecting different results.
How many like COBOL coders do you think they have in like reserve just in case on these APT teams? Because like I remember when the pandemic first started, they're like, oh, these states' systems are having trouble processing everyone's data and all that because they're all written in COBOL. And they're like, and the average age of the current COBOL developer is like 60 and retired and stuff like that. And I'm like, that, I remember when they were talking, when you and I first got it started up, and they were like, yeah, well, they laid off these guys because they only knew COBOL and stuff like that. And I'm like, COBOL, they're like, yeah, don't worry about it. No one uses it anymore. And that was like, dude, that was over 15 years ago, right?
Yeah.
And now it's like, well, ha, ha, ha. Ugh.
Right. That's another thing that I see places do all the time. Like, oh, well, nobody uses it anymore. We're going to get rid of this guy because we can outsource it, or we just don't use it that much anymore. And it's like, okay, you don't use it that much anymore, or you don't use it at all anymore. Because as a pen tester, I can tell you that there's always, always a Windows XP Service Pack 0 box somewhere on the network. There always is. And I don't know why. And you know, they're like, well, we have proprietary software. And I'm like, and you can't like possibly put that, like, maybe we just
proprietary
pay
software that if we put it on even Windows 7, it breaks.
Right. Yeah. Or maybe pay $1,000 to get a new piece of software. I don't know. Like, do something so that you're not, you don't have a Windows XP Service Pack 0 box. Like, please.
Well, and yeah, my favorite is when people, I was talking to my buddy about this the other day. He is a pen tester for a firm, and he still finds random dial-up modems that are still out there that they can dial up into, and they're just still connected, probably to that XP box, by the way, dude.
That's so awesome. And I have to say that I have literally thought about going on eBay and trying to find like an old 286 or 386 computer with a modem. And I remember bulletin board systems, and that's kind of what I want to get back to, because I do hear that there's a lot of bulletin board systems that are actually still active and still out there. And I really want to explore that space a little bit more. But I do have to say that I've never been on a pen test where I found a modem that's connected somewhere. But now that you've mentioned that, if I ever get back into the game, then maybe I'll have to start exploring that.
Thanks, Dustin. And thank you, Frank. That's all the time we have for this episode of the podcast. But to keep listening, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts.